Hello and welcome to Defend Your Ship. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good midnight, whatever time you're listening to this, hopefully in the middle of the night. I feel like that's a good time to listen to a podcast about shipping.
We are equal opportunity.
And with me today, I have Raina, my
Hello.
Co-host. And we also have our lovely guest, Maggie
Hello.
McMuffin.
Hey. So we have a very special topic today, but before we get into that, we must do our segment we do every time, which is, what the fuck are you into this week? Who wants to go first?
Raina, do you want to share your tragic, tragic news?
I can go first.
Oh, the tragic, tragic news.
Oh, God.
Well, it's not really tragic, because, like, it was kind of time, to be honest. But, like, the feelings du jour of the week is the fact that Supernatural ended and Tumblr has collapsed.
Oh, God.
I mean, Tumblr had already collapsed.
Okay, we don't know when this episode is
no,
actually going to air.
It aired on Thursday.
But now I have to... our episode. We don't know in the future. This episode will be airing in the future. And people would be like, what are you talking about? Supernatural ended like months
ago. It's fine. It's fine.
I'm just going to have to like bump our schedule and move this up so it can be more topical.
I don't think people are going to.
Well, anyway,
people
everyone,
are not
put on your
care
little
that
imagination
much.
Hats and go back in time. To work.
Remember that time is an illusion.
Yes. Yes. Especially in quarantine.
It is.
But yeah, I.
Especially on our podcast in quarantine.
I finished all...
Time is an illusion on our podcast. I mean, we're talking about feelings from like 10, 15 years ago.
Well,
that's
like, that's the thing,
illusory.
Is that, like, I can now say I finished all 15 seasons of Supernatural, and I, like, rode the trash train to its end.
Are you okay?
I'm okay! Like, honestly, oh I'm God. Pretty fucking okay.
Are you
because,
just happy it's
like,
over?
I'm happy it's over!
I'm going to be honest,
me too.
I have
me
hated
too.
Supernatural for years.
That is fair. Like again, I didn't watch
too.
It
yeah.
because of its quality. I watched it because...
Why did
cause,
you?
Because I started in 2012 when my college friends were like, oh my God, you have to watch this thing. It's great. And I basically binged watched all the way through like season 8 or 9 at the time. And then I just kept going because it was like, all right, I want to be part of the discourse. Sure.
I mean,
and yeah.
I rewatched one episode of that show just when all of this was happening with the like the Destiel Putin week. I was like, you know what, I need
week.
To go back. I need to see when and how this all started. Oh my God, it was amazing. I just wanted to hear Castiel say, I am the one who gripped you tight and raised you from perdition. I wanted to hear those words come out of a real human being's mouth. You know what I mean? Just to make sure it wasn't
Is Misha Collins a real human being,
It feels like a drug-induced haze.
I mean...
We're unclear. I mean, could have been fabricated by the studio and was just programmed to say those words. That makes more sense than a human being like saying, yes, this is good dialogue.
Misha Collins
I'll say this
is
aloud.
The queerest person in
and
that
have you
cast.
Tape it.
I will say that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we've known that for years. I feel like that poor man has been begging them to make it gay for ages, and they were finally like, you can have a little gay.
But it
treat.
Wasn't!
You can have one line of gay dialogue.
But it wasn't even really gay. Like... It was...
No, it wasn't! It wasn't! They cheated him!
I mean, it was...
He did not get what he wanted out of that relationship with Dean
I mean,
or the
it
directors.
It was really gay in the fact that he got to declare his love and then immediately die.
It was! Yeah!
I mean,
it's nothing
someone...
gayer than death. Death is gay. I'm sorry. Everybody, all of these straight men who are out there dying, I'm sorry, you gay now.
You're just
death
appropriating
is gay.
Queer culture. Everyone's out here dying and complaining that they can't go home for the holidays, and it's like, welcome to being queer. Everyone's queer now.
Yup. Yeah, welcome to being queer. You can't go home for the holidays. That's just
that should
how
be
it
our
is.
Next shirt. Death is gay.
Death is gay. Okay, I'm going to write that down. T-shirt ideas. Death is gay. Defend your ship 2020. Attribution.
I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I was never, like, I will admit I have read some Destiel fanfic simply because it was for the past 10 years. But
yeah,
it wasn't something I was emotionally invested in like some other people were emotionally invested in. And so it was like, again, I did it for the discourse because I do everything for the discourse. So that's just who I am as a person. And so, like, I mean, I knew they were never going to make it gay simply because, like, that's just not what that show is. Like,
it really isn't.
They've given us queer characters since then, but it's just like, Jensen Ackles was never going to be comfortable with the idea of having an on-screen queer relationship. And that's just...
Especially
that's
just not after all of the, like, heckling. I mean, he has withstood quite a bit of just fan involvement in his personal life for, like, a decade. And I feel like at a certain point, you're just not inclined to give the fans what they want after they've asked you and asked you and asked you.
Yeah, but
I
it's a shame.
Not to, like, defend him, but...
It's a shame though, because like he's so goddamn pretty, and also he played.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like the defining character of his career. The other great nerd character that he played was he voiced Jason Todd. So it's like, I don't know, Jensen Ackles, if you don't want people to call your characters bisexual, stop playing bisexual characters.
Hey,
mood.
Really good advice.
This is like,
well, I mean, you might want to write to him about that. Just make sure he makes good choices in the future.
This is like with Ben-Hur when they were shooting it, like way in the way back times, and everyone was like, okay, we are in agreement that Ben-Hur is a fucking gay piece of cinema. This is a gay ass script, but we have Charlton Heston as the lead and he's not going to abide that. So no one mentioned this being gay to him and he'll never know ever.
Wait, are you saying, is that why I loved Ben-Hur so much as a child? Because that was one of my favorite movies when I was like eight.
Oh yeah, no, Ben-Hur is not accidentally homoerotic. It was intentionally told as a love story as much as they could get past the studio and also past Charlton Heston, who is a renowned homophobe, well, Maggie. Past tense, because he's dead now, which means he's gay.
Yeah.
And...
Amen.
And so, like, everyone else was, like, working on this great romance, but with Charlton Heston, they would just go up and be like, now you're just, like, a dude who is talking to his friend and, like, maybe having some feelings that you gotta work out by ripping your shirt off. Okay, Charlton Heston, you got me.
Holy shit.
Yep.
Well,
I gotta watch Ben Hur now, because I don't even think I knew at the time when I was watching it that I was watching something gay. What the fuck?
I mean... It's also just so funny because, like, Supernatural has been known as the, like, fanfic show. Like, the show that
it's done so much for us.
Like, they literally have parodied, like, their later seasons are a parody of themselves.
They went to a convention.
Like, yes, they are.
And if you've seen any, con appearance or, like photos and videos of Misha Collins and Jensen Ackles like interacting in real life, they are very touchy feely and like love to make jokes about how much like they love each other and shit like that. Yet somehow,
all boys do that. All boys do that though. That's just how boys interact. Like that's just how straight men will just do that with each other, and they'll think that it's okay because they're straight and they don't have to like. Think any deeper into it, and everybody else is just out here trying to like establish a presence and narrative for ourselves and our desires, and straight men are like, nah, you just can't, we're not your playground. And we're like, yes you are, you're a fictional character. Sorry,
like your fictional characters, yes, people who do real life shipping, they can fuck off, but characters, we're allowed to read into them.
That's and its own whole fucking world. Jesus.
We are allowed to interpret art as we see it happening.
Yes.
That's what viewing art is.
Supernatural, I mean, is certainly art.
So basically, TLDR, I'm gonna try to get Venatrix on the show to have a rant about Destiel with me.
Hopefully by the
Oh,
time.
Venatrix will do that for us?
Oh
Perfect.
my God, she is a
I
wreck.
mean,
Perfect.
she hasn't said yes yet,
Has she said
but
no?
she hasn't said no either.
There's hope. There's hope for me. I want to do a Destiel episode so bad, you have no idea. I want it.
Because I feel like Venatrix is the perfect person to just tap into that queer anger.
Oh, no.
Oh yeah. I feel like Venatrix should be another like podcast cryptid of ours where we just refer to Venatrix is going to be on the show pretty soon
Oh,
and it
no.
never happens.
Venatrix is a wreck. Like, she was saying that she hadn't seen it and she was now like invested. And I was like, well, I've been seeing some of the early reviews and someone said that this finale makes the Game of Thrones finale look like a masterpiece. So,
Woof!
and then I
Woof!
went on, and then I went on Twitter and I looked at the tag and I just came back and I just and was like, you should not watch this.
Amen. I have been into nothing this week. I will just say that. I don't think I've oh wait, no, okay. I've been into something. I've been reading my friend's fan fiction for The Untamed. Yes, I'm talking about that
Oh
again. It's really good.
my God, Stevie,
What?
one of my best friends is like the top fan fiction writer in The Untamed right now. I'm gonna connect you on Twitter.
Who? Wait, who is it? I probably fucking
It's
know them.
Scarlett O'Hara Dye. I don't know what her.
I wonder if I fucking know this person.
I'm just gonna go on Twitter right now and tag you. Keep talking.
Please do. Please do. I fucking love that series, as everyone on this podcast knows, because I wouldn't shut up about it last season. So I'm reading this wonderful fan fiction by a wonderful, wonderful friend of mine, Hans Beckhart, who I plug all the time. It's called The Roots Grow Righteous, and it is this really interesting, like, horror magical realism, but it's also just like a casual love story and like a story about New York. And then at the same time, the main character has plants growing out of his body, and he's dealing with this like body horror on the regular. It's amazing. It's 15 chapters in. It's going to be a total of 20. It's like it's one that's like worth keeping up with. I don't usually read fan fiction as it's ongoing because I'm a binger, but this one has been worth it. It's been an absolute delight.
Stevie, what the fuck is your Twitter?
It's the Sonic Kitty. Because someone had already taken Sonic Kitty, and I'm like, excuse me, I've been Sonic Kitty on Tumblr for like 15 years, and I'm not gonna stop now, even though I don't need a Doctor Who handle anymore.
Okay.
And that was the goal of that handle, was to be slightly Doctor
You and
Who-ish.
Scarlett are connected. I've done my good deed for the day.
Wonderful. You're a good person.
What are you into this week, Maggie?
God, I'm just all over the place. I've been working on a really big clown piece that's about like white middle class women's mental health journeys in the 1960s. So I've been reading lots of stuff about that. And also, I finally started making my faux core denim vest because, as you both know, I have many denim vests, all of which are themed. And the one that I'm making right now is faux core themed. So right now I have this weird New York City pin on it. I have something from the Vivitch and I have something from Midsommar. And I'm thinking of embroidering the Blair Witch and the Wicker Man symbols on it just because I haven't found anything for either of those things that meets my criteria. So we'll see how this vest develops.
I saw the Midsummer patch and I thought it was super cute and very, very much your style. And I'm interested to see how this ends up.
Yeah, I love folk horror. Folk horror might actually be my favorite subgenre of horror. I don't know though. It might just be because I miss going outside.
Today's ship. I don't know if this is necessarily going to be entirely a defense as much as a roast. A little bit of both.
¿Por qué no los dos?
Because both me and Maggie are fans of polyamory in general, in life and in media. And I guess Marvel kind of gave us what we wanted after all these years, after decades-ish.
Ish.
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 You mean kind of like Supernatural did, or like better than Supernatural did?
Like better, but like it could be more explicit. And by more explicit, I mean like I need to see a threesome happening on the page.
Same.
So what we're talking about, I don't remember who is writing the comic because I don't really pay attention to Marvel comics, but officially Jean Grey and Cyclops are now in a triad with Wolverine. Officially.
I have heard of this.
And Scott Summers is also dating Emma Frost, but she is not part of the triad.
No, she's not part of it. I think she's just dating Cyclops.
Yes, she is just dating Cyclops on the side. So it's like an X-Men clusterfuck polycule.
Except it's like actually rather like domestic.
Yes, because they live together. Wolverine, Jean Grey, and Cyclops now live together.
Yeah. So, yeah, Cyclops, Wolverine, and Jean live together, and they all have their own bedrooms, and their bedrooms are connected. So Jean's in the middle, and she has a doorway into Wolverine's room and a doorway into Cyclops' room, and none of the other bedrooms in the house do this. And that was basically what told everyone that this was happening, is there was a layout of the Summers house. And
yes,
that's what happened. So other than that, like, they're living together, but the X-Men have always pretty much been living together. Like, they're very based on communal living.
Mm-hmm.
That is true.
In a big sexy house.
Yeah. In a big sexy house, except now they have a sentient island.
Ugh. Love it.
Named Krakoa, yeah. And it's their own island, and we don't need to talk about that because, quite frankly, I'm not. There are people who are interested in the X-Men because of their place in the world, and there are people who are interested in the X-Men because they're a soap opera and they're messy, and they're messy but with superpowers.
Well, the reason I wanted Maggie to come on for this episode is because she is one of the biggest Jean Grey fans I know, to the point that you have done a couple acts as Jean Grey?
No, I've done one. It's just that I've been doing it for so long that it's evolved. It's mutated. I did it within the run of a scripted burlesque play twice. That was slightly changed both times because we had different casts and therefore different characters. And I've also done the act independently of any greater narrative many, many, many times. And then I also was on a Sci-Fi Wired segment on their YouTube channel a couple of years ago talking about the Phoenix Saga.
You have all the X-Men cred that we need for this episode.
That's true.
My X-Men knowledge is very limited. Please do not ask me anything about extended stuff. Don't ask me about specific teams. I am not a huge X-Men nerd. I am a huge fan of messy polycules and Jean Grey.
And I mean, this is what this podcast is about. Absolutely. Is the messy polycules.
Yeah, I don't care how much like actual archival knowledge you have of a thing. I just care how much you want to see people get it on.
And
or just not even see it, just maybe think about it or conceptualize it or whatever. Yeah. Even if it's not getting it on, embracing, being kind to each other, braiding each other's hair, whatever. We're here for
it. I should also stress that sometimes people will try to like argue with me or debate with me about ships within X-Men, and I'm like, no, I actually don't care about the ships themselves. What I care about is the different interpersonal relationships and how they are affected by different ships occurring or going away. So like, if I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, there's this, like, there was this cute thing of like Jean and Wolverine together, and people come in and be like, Wolverine should be with Storm, and I'm like, okay, that's cool too.
Yeah,
I I don't care about them being together. Like, I do admittedly have a lot of feelings about Scott and Jean, but I don't really ship them. Like, I have nothing against them being together, but I also do feel that when you have characters who have been around as long as they have, that you can say, like, I think that during, like, the Claremont era, they were a great thing. Their relationship was very integral to the Phoenix saga. But in the same way, I really enjoyed watching their growth and them falling apart when Grant Morrison was writing them and writing them as adults and not, you know, like, people in their mid-20s.
I like the differentiation between people in their mid-20s and adults. I appreciate that as someone in my late 20s.
Everyone under 25 is a child to me.
And we say that with love. Like, I think that's a good thing. I think it's good to be like, no, I'm really not done cooking yet, and that's
no
fine.
Yeah, it's totally fine. If you're 23 or 24 and you're having a hard time, like, don't worry, it's because you're still growing up.
Growing pains are a thing. Sometimes they just don't just happen in your bones. Sometimes they happen everywhere.
Exactly.
I mean, that definitely puts my bad decisions into perspective between the ages of 20 and 25.
Yeah, it makes me really glad I didn't get married.
Now, meanwhile, I have never been a child. I have been an adult since I was 9 years old. So
people used to say that about me too, actually. And that sort of made me think I ought to get married when I was 22.
Anyway, my point is, before we start, like, deep dive discussion, I don't want anyone to think that I'm defending a ship, that I'm saying that any X-Men ship is invalid. I mean, I guess some of them are. I did hear at one point that, like, Rogue had absorbed Polaris's, like, part of her identity and was dating Magneto, and that sounded a little weird. But you know what? You know what? X-Men can do what they want. Oh, wait, no.
I mean, yeah, like,
I am X-Men against Jean Grey and Professor X as a pairing. As someone who actually, like, is, like, totally down with, like, a mentor-mentee kink thing, I am staunchly against them as a couple, and anyone who says otherwise, I will meet you in the pit.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, fair.
That's not even me being pro Magneto and Professor X. I just don't like Professor X. He's an asshole.
I love it when people have strong negative opinions about the X-Men. It just makes me really happy. I feel like there's somewhere off in the ether, like, some nerd boy hears it and just knows.
I mean, basically, my feelings about X-Men only really extend to the X-Men First Class universe, and that's because it's hella queer and has pretty boys in it. But that's just me.
I just love Wolverine. That's pretty much where I live. I just love Wolverine.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
So, anyway, should we talk about why this polycule is interesting and why it is not?
I mean, take me through it. Take the lead on this. I'm just along for the ride. I'm just here to enjoy hearing things about Wolverine, about and adjacent to Wolverine, whom I love.
Maggie, take the wheel.
You will regret this.
No, unlikely.
So when Jean Grey was introduced into the X-Men in, like, one of the very, very, very early issues in the 60s, she was just the team girl. And as such, she kind of, like, got hit on or flirted with pretty much every male member of the team, including Professor X, who is very unethical. And I don't know the history, but I know eventually, like, her and Scott paired up. And I always thought this was really interesting. A thing, when I was in Burlesque Men the first year, we had a Scott played by my friend Nathan Kiss, who is a very, very talented person. He's so talented. He's my favorite himbo. He's a radical activist, and he does good smut. And he's also just a big old nerd. And so we were the straight men in the show. Everyone else got to be a little zanier because we were like, well, they're usually like team mom and dad, especially if Professor X is gone. Like, and they're also, you know, it's very important to point out that they are two people who, like, they pass for Homo sapien. And so them getting together when they're younger feels very much like an expectation that they are fulfilling. It's not just that, you know, oh, it's like, it's not just Jean's the good girl and Scott's the good boy. It's also that, no, no, you two represent like the best forward facing mutants that this school could have to make humans not fear us. And so like, it feels kind of like this, like when they do PR stunts with teenage stars.
Oof.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like they, and like, obviously they have a lot in common. They're trauma bonded. They go through a lot together. And I do think that they genuinely care for each other. But I also think that because they've grown up in this very isolated, world, growing up in a boarding school, they also can't fully see the world that's out there, because for them, going out into the world means going out into the world to fight against enemies who are either attacking the earth and we're trying to get rid of them so that humans like us, or we're fighting against humans that are actively trying to pull a Holocaust allegory. So they're isolated, but they're isolated together because they don't have a lot of people who are going to understand that, especially since they're from the days when the school was like much smaller and the general X-Men mutant cast was much smaller. And then as they grow up, you know, they're learning about things. And that's one of the things that I like looking at in the Phoenix Saga, and that people point out when they talk about it as like a feminist piece of writing or viewing it through a feminist lens, is that once Jean gets the Phoenix Force inside of her, like she's feeling bolder and wilder, and she's like feeling sexual feelings for the first time. And she winds up initiating her and Scott losing their virginity, you know, out on a mesa in the middle of the desert.
That's a good location.
You know, and it's great. And like, and they basically psychically fluid bond, because that's when they establish a mental link between the two of them. That's just the two of them and can't be broken. And it's like, that's a really big step that these like 24-year-olds are making. Mm-hmm. And so they're very together, but you have to understand, like, they're still 24, and we are seeing Jean learn the extent of her powers, learn how powerful she can be, learn what her urges are, learn what she's been repressing and what she's ready to let out. And then you also have Scott, who is becoming more of a leader in the X-Men and trying very hard to adhere to respectability politics, but also trying to be his own person, but feeling that he can't because he just has had so much put on him. And so it makes sense that they would get together and stay together and keep staying together. But then once they go out in the world and start meeting other people, they're like, oh, we have other options? Huh. I mean, who among us hasn't seen that person who was like, oh yeah, I dated my high school sweetheart, and then we just stayed together until I was 23 because I didn't realize that I could break up with them?
Yes, I have seen that. I've seen that go very badly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we don't teach people that it's like a relationship can be going fine, but you can understand that it doesn't serve you and then break up with them. So they both have different things. It becomes a big, I know Scott cheats on Jean a few times. There's always lots of drama. They get married at one point, but then I think they get unmarried, and they have like, I don't even know about all of their children. I thought two of them were one person until a couple of months ago when I was actually reading Dawn of X to find out about the polyamory. And I was just like, they have too many goddamn kids. who mostly they didn't even have to raise. So they get,
it's true.
So it's again, yes. Like they didn't put in any effort, and now they're like this nuclear family with tons of time hopping kids who are also super powerful and who like they have good relationships with, but at the same time, did Jean actually even give birth to them? Like I don't understand this. It's very confusing.
X-Men is confusing in general, at the best of times.
Anyway, at some point, and like I said, I don't know all the history, I can't point to issues or stuff. At some point, Wolverine comes in, and in pretty much all famous media on the screen of X-Men, there's a love triangle that's established. It isn't established in X-Men Evolution because Jean and Scott are high schoolers and Wolverine is an adult, but there's still a love triangle. The idea of there being a love triangle is kind of integral to Jean and Scott's relationship. Mm-hmm. So, but in the animated series, in the original Fox movies, didn't really happen in the First Class universe, but there was this weird thing where like Jean telepathically connected with Wolverine during his cameo and like calmed him down and he ran away. And I was like, and yeah, when Scott was like, what did you do, Jean? I was like, she just established a love triangle. Because for some reason we have to shoehorn this in. But like Wolverine is always like, ah, oh, Jeannie, I love her. Jeannie's so great. And like Jean doesn't hate Logan. And there are times where it's more like, Logan, you're just my friend. And other times when it's like, no, Logan, I do want you, but like, I can't be with you because I have to be with Scott. And like, you're the bad boy and stuff. And they really play up the bad boy, good man angle in the live action movies. Like
they try, but it doesn't translate to me.
It doesn't. And meanwhile, I'm just sitting there like, I mean, James Marsden and Hugh Jackman, either way is pretty great.
Well, and either of them could be perceived as the good man or the bad boy, honestly. In my opinion.
I mean, in different ways.
In like, very different ways.
I spent a lot of time like in college being like, not everyone can be Wolverine. Like, you can have one Wolverine on the team. If everyone was Wolverine, you wouldn't have a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's like a lone wolf and he goes off. And you do need someone to like hold shit together and to be the one who says, no, there is no candy for dinner. Everyone needs to go to bed. We have an early day tomorrow. And Scott has kind of been written a little bit out of that. He's gotten a little bit more radicalized in the past few years, but that is always how I have seen Scott, is very much being like, I wish I could be the fun one. I wish I got to be fun dad, but I don't. Okay. Not all of us get to be fun dad. Not all of us get to ride a motorcycle and just spontaneously fight their half brother twice a year. So you have that love triangle going down, and then you also have eventually when Emma Frost like becomes good and joins the team, because during the Phoenix Saga, she tried killing all of the X-Men. She was a big part of Jean going Dark Phoenix, and she was the Black Queen to Emma's White Queen in the Hellfire Club, and Emma is just like the toppiest fucking top. And she's also, and I feel like this gets ignored by people, Emma Frost is considerably older than Scott and Jean. And so what this all boils down to is Scott is basically in a love triangle of his own design where he just can't decide which top he wants to get pegged by. Ooh,
that's lovely. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, I think... So I identify very heavily as a bottom, as a heavy bottom. That said, the first time I ever heard someone say, oh yeah, Jean's given the big strap to Scott and Wolverine, I was like, yes, she is. Like, I don't think she's even necessarily like toppy in a super kinky way, but just in a like presence way. And Emma is definitely like, no, that bitch has like a stable of pups that she lets run around on her palatial grounds. And if you need to be punished, she will punish you. Like, I mean, just look at the side by side of their outfits.
Yeah.
Like, Emma isn't just gratuitously sexy. Emma is wearing fetish clothes. And so when you get all four of these people together and you've got everything going on. So this also comes back to a conversation in Polly about, you know, like when is polyamory not going to solve a problem? And I feel that this is a very big example of that, because Scott kind of like teases Jean about Wolverine liking her, and it's like, okay, I kind of trust you, but it's okay. But then like, he'll be gruff with Logan sometimes, but him and Logan are kind of like, okay, we both love Jean. We both love Jean, and we're just going to fucking get through the day. And Jean doesn't always manage it. Meanwhile, Jean is not okay with Scott and Emma at all.
So I think that in many continuities, it's like, oh yeah, I think Jean Scott and Logan could have worked out. There is no way in hell. Like, that was the thing that surprised me, is that they threw Emma into this polyamory mix. And I really feel that if Hickman just like had really gone full force into this, it would have been great to see Scott calling Jean out and being like, you also have Logan. I fucking have put up with that for years, and I've been okay with it, and I've come to terms with it, and now he is living in our house. Why can't I sometimes have a weekend with Emma? And Jean just being like, because I hate her. Well, why do you hate her, Jean? Because she's a bitch. Do you have any other specific things? Fine, but she's not allowed to stay over. But she's not allowed to stay over at our house. like, Jean and Emma have gotten into psychic battles, and Emma's not innocent there. She's done weird shit where like she's turned into Jean to like help Scott. Or I think it was Grant Morrison who wrote the thing where she was like doing therapy for Scott, but she was like. But she was like forming like a place in the mind, in their mind, and so she would make her mind self look like Jean, and then her and Scott would like have sex, and then sometimes she would have sex with Scott looking like herself, and Jean found out and like broke into the mind palace because because her and Emma are like top tier telepaths, and destroyed it, and Scott's only excuse was, Jean, it didn't happen with our physical bodies, so it doesn't count as cheating.
Oh my god, honey. Scott, no.
Scott Summers.
Scott, weak sauce.
Did Scott Summers event emotional affairs? Perhaps.
Woof.
Well, also, haven't they hinted that like Scott Have and they? Logan are also getting it on at the same time? I mean,
okay, so there's been a lot of stuff about hinting that Logan is bisexual for a while, enough that like I would totally believe that. I think I've seen that like, I think that's more fan servicey, because when I read Dawn of X and House of X, and I haven't read a lot of the series that came out of that, I'm like, I've gotten enough of a vibe that I'm like, I think sometimes because both of them are pretty subby, that if Jean was like, I want both of you tonight, they'd be like, well, if either of us say no, both of us lose out. So we're going to be in on this. Like,
yep.
Like, I think that they can definitely fuck in the same room. I don't think that there was anything in the text that really made it look like they were even hinting at Scott and Logan also being together. It feels very much like a V triad. And again, people who want to write fan fiction or imagine that they are a full on triad, go for it. Live your dreams.
Oh yeah, that's a good dream. It is a good dream. But yeah, I kind of agree with you that I've never, I don't know, I guess it's something maybe, you know, obviously I've thought about it because why wouldn't I think about that? But I don't necessarily think that it's in the text. I don't get tin hatty about it the way I do about other ships. Like, I don't think that something's going on there and the writers just can't say. I just think that I'm horny for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's a I really feel that you should be able to ship pretty much anyone with anyone except for Jean and Professor X with the X-Men.
I respect that.
And that was something that we played with in the first round of the Burl X-Men, because Logan was played as a soft butch lesbian by Scarlett O'Hara Dye. And so we were also playing with like what that queering looked like, and especially since Nathan, who was playing Scott, was Black. Basically, I think that there are a lot of arguments for Jean Grey being like a very held up white woman character who is not always that interesting or that great. And I think that summed it up, because it was her, because we would have me flirting with Logan, but like just as friends, and like we played it as like Logan being very sincere and being like, I want to kiss you, and me being like, oh Logan, you're such a good friend, you're so great, but like Scott knowing what was happening and just being like, hey Jean, how about we go over here and talk, and it's like, oh, I'm just talking to Logan, and it's like and it's like I'm not gonna, and it's just like, you are
oh, you're being so naive and stupid about this. Like, Jean's just being like, of course, I'm just friends with everyone. And I don't need to, like, consider anyone's, like, actual real feelings. I'm just going to look at base feelings. And so that was that was definitely a fun dynamic to play with. And I think that a lot of what I drew on that from, because there's a difference between, like, when you're kind of playing parody and, like, what you're playing at. But we were all doing a lot of, like, serious acting in that show. And so a lot of what I was thinking about was, like, well, yeah, it's, like, on one level, it's really funny that, like, Jean doesn't get that Logan likes her. But on the other hand, like, if we dive deep, I think she really does enjoy the attention. And it's a level of attention that she's not getting from Scott, and that she honestly doesn't know how to voice her want of. So, you know, she's just kind of, like, dealing with it. And I think she's, like, I mean, Jean's really smart. She's really fucking smart. And she's a telepath. She literally knows people inside and out. So the fact that she just doesn't understand what's going on and it's just kind of brushing off Scott's feelings, it's kind of a bitchy move. And I think she's just playing at naivete.
Mm. I like that. That's a good take.
Thank you. Yeah, In the second run of the show, we did not have a Scott, unfortunately. We still had Logan, and so it very much changed the dynamic to not have Scott there. Mm. Like, even though it was me and Scarlett again saying a bunch of the same dialogue, but then, like, some of Scott's lines got given to Logan for the second run. And so it was like, we're playing the same characters, but without Scott there, like, this relationship really is different. It's so drastically different. And I think that's part of why people think of them as a constant love triangle, because it's really about the contrast between Scott and Logan.
That's interesting, because I actually made a similar argument in another podcast we did.
Well, I had no idea this was going to go there.
Buffy.
I'm gobsmacked.
Because I literally, my argument was basically the same as yours, where it's like, any relationship that, like, that triad has, if, like, it's between Angel and Spike's relationship, Buffy and Spike's relationship, and Angel and Buffy's relationship, like, after, like, all the events of the show and, like, the comics, if you care to think about comic continuity, is, like, all of their dynamics are going to be informed by the dynamic that yes. those two characters have with the third character.
And
yeah, and that's,
and
oh, go for it.
No, you go.
I was going to introduce a third triad to contrast, and because just that sort of, like, V-shape triad was reminding me of Leverage and Hardison and Elliot and Parker. Although I think that V-shape does close into a triangle at some point, at least in my imagination.
Yeah, it's like some love triangles are just like, oh, this is stupid straight people, like, monocentric nonsense. But some love triangles are like, no, this is actually really interesting and does illuminate a lot about the characters.
Yeah.
Especially since I think when the love triangle really got going was around the Phoenix Saga. So it's like Jean is literally being torn in two directions and figuring out her place in the literal universe. So it would make sense that one of the ways that she would be figuring that out, and a way that they would be showcasing that on the page, would just be in the quieter moments of her in her love life.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes sense, to sort of her internal struggle is made sort of tangible in a way through the two men that she's experiencing that duality with.
Exactly. And comparing that with Emma, Jean, and Scott, is we actually do get to see them as a love triangle. We also get to see Emma and Scott existing as a couple after Jean has died.
Hmm.
And her death is very interesting because, and as someone who has been in love with people who have had dead spouses, Jean is still kind of there. It's still kind of a love triangle. There's, God, I hate attributing anything to Joss Whedon. What a piece of shit, but his X-Men run was good. is Scott gets into a fight with someone about Jean, and he like gets out of bed with Emma in the morning, and Emma is just like watching from above in a window, and she's like excellent breeding, I have excellent breeding, tons of money, the best plastic surgery money can buy, and I still write second to a corpse.
Boy.
Like, because it's like someone, and oof, there's a really beautiful moment where, because it's Grant Morrison, so it goes off the rails, and the fourth and like the last few issues are like set in the far-flung future, and it's really weird, but you like encounter a future version of Jean who is fully mixed together with the Phoenix Force, and she's guarding the universe egg, and it opens with like what the present time is with Scott and Emma over her gravesite, and Emma being like, so have you made a decision about if you're going to be together? And it's one thing for them to be together, but this cosmic Jean who's in the future is like holding this world in her hands and looking at them and decides that she no longer wishes to be angry and says she can have whatever she wants, and what she wants is for Scott to live and to live happily. And then Scott and Emma are like, aww, kissing right over Jean's grave. Mm. And that's how Scott and Emma got together during that era of the X-Men, like officially together after that. When Whedon took over, like they're sleeping in the same bedroom. They're obviously a couple. They're official. Even though they're still doing this, and I think it's very rare. We often see like, I want my love to be happy, but it's usually like this very sacrificial thing in media when we're like, oh, well, you're better off with them. I'm wrong for you. You should be with them because at least, or like, I'm not going to stand in your way anymore because I want you to be happy. But this was also Jean saying that for herself, she didn't want to be like that anymore. And so her growth came from recognizing not just, oh, Scott's not the one for me, but also I'm not the one for Scott right now. And he has a really good thing with Emma, and I'm not there. I shouldn't really force my opinion into it.
Yeah. Wow, that's very beautiful. You actually gave me goosebumps there for a second.
I really love Grant Morrison's run on the X-Men. It was shown to me by a partner who I was dating at the time, who in the time since we've been apart, I have recognized that we were great for each other in a lot of ways. They were very abusive to me in a lot of ways, but also I was not the person for them. And I always got so jealous whenever they'd go out and date people. And I remember reading that like on a cross-country flight going back to them after a weekend after I later found out they had cheated on me. Oh. But I just spent like a week on a work trip, just like so angry. And I read that on this cross country flight, and I was just like weeping in my seat.
Oh my God.
And I got home and I showed it to him, and I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that I've been so jealous and awful, and that I don't let you like have the relationships with people that you want to have.
Oh my God. Well, I guess that answers already, like, what have you learned from this ship? I mean, I feel like we've gone through a whole journey here just talking about this triad.
Yeah, I feel that I have learned a lot about this ship and watching how these love triangles have played out a lot, because also, I've been in so many triads. I've been in so many V triads. I've been solo poly. I've been a secondary person so many times. I've been a primary partner who had my partner want to start dating someone else. And I have always had to deal with being jealous. And Jean Grey, that is one of the reasons why I identify with her, because I am much better at introducing new partners to myself than I am at seeing my partner see someone new. And I think when I was, you know, when I was like 23, 24, 25, I identified with that jealousy
And I was like, it is nice to see someone who is jealous like me on the page, because also during that time, people in poly circles were still like, if you're jealous, you're bad at poly. Yeah. And you're a bad partner and you're toxic.
Whereas
now I can see what it is. Like, if I were dating someone and someone like Emma Frost came along, I'd be like, I'd be super jealous because I'd want to fuck her so hard. But also it would be like, oh my God, this woman is amazing. Why the fuck is this guy still with me when he has this now? I need to be better than her. I need to prove that I'm better than her. I need to fight her. Instead of like being able to sit down and be like, so what's your favorite strap on to use? What kind of toys do you use? Do you use leather restraints, or are you more of a shibari person?
Oh, it's beautiful. I feel like,
and I have, and I have actually seen like love triangles, like love triangles, like navigating new relationship dynamics with friends who are submissives, and they have different DOMs. And I've also done that, where there was a period of time where I had multiple daddies, and I was like, I don't want you all to be interchangeable. I just want to figure out your thing. But you know, also in kink discourse, we don't talk about, you know, tops getting to be vulnerable and getting to feel less than powerful. And I think that, again, if the X-Men just really, really wanted to go hardcore, they could do deep dives on poly, but also they could do actual deep dives on DS relationships and stuff, and how DS is different from S&M, and kink is different than fetish. And like, I don't know, maybe I should just learn how to write. Maybe I'll figure out how to make Tina Horn friends with me and be like, can we write this together?
I would write something with you. Are you kidding? This would be fantastic.
Yeah. Let's write a superhero soap opera that just talks about different poly dynamics.
I was actually just about to say, I was like, wow, I'd really love to just watch a show that was just about this dynamic in like a really close perspective, sort of just slice of life kind of way. I would be into that. That's very much my genre.
And then we'll just have a recurring character who's not in every issue, who is like who's like a comet who just comes through. And it'll be like a big event. Like, oh, did you know so-and-so is coming this weekend? It's like, so-and-so is coming this weekend. It's like, yeah, I'm having some feelings about it, but everyone else is really happy, so I don't want to talk about them. I don't know. I just feel like every time they're in the room, I sort of disappear. Mm-hmm. But they're also really cool. And I know they're not doing that intentionally. So womp womp.
Ugh, sounds like how I feel about Slade Cocaine.
Oh God. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that whenever Slade Cocaine is in the room, like I know that I've definitely been responsible for being like, where's Stevie? Is Stevie even here anymore?
It's all encompassed by Slade Cocaine.
Well, Slade Cocaine is in Iceland right now, last I heard, so you don't have to worry about that happening.
Oh, thank God. Has Slade Cocaine been in Iceland for the entire quarantine then? Or
I don't think the entire quarantine. There? No, I think some numbers went down. I don't know. They were saying something about like a sugar daddy, so it's possible that they got some sort of like private flight there, which I have feelings about them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We've never said that Slade Cocaine is a perfect person.
No, we never have, because Slade Cocaine is not a perfect person. They're just a really cool person.
Yes, it's funny how often those two things don't go hand in hand.
Yes, but going back, sometimes you want the cool person and sometimes you want the perfect person.
That's beautiful. This is, I think we've really wrapped things up and come full circle very well.
So... Could we argue that Emma is Scott's comet?
They all live on Krakoa. I would say that Emma is,
that's true,
probably a secondary, or at the very, or I, but I do think it's more accurate to not say that Emma is the secondary, but to say that Jean is the nesting partner.
Hmm.
But I also think that,
yes,
Emma strikes me as the sort of person who would be more into solo poly, because like Queen needs her space.
I can respect that.
Like she's not gonna be sitting playing house with like all the fucking kids and doing family dinner night all the time. I think that she's also pretty happy to be like, you know what? It's good that Scott has Jean, because I don't want to fucking do that. I don't cook. I don't clean. Jean can have that ring.
Yeah.
Well, I think so. The reason I like wanted to talk about this is because I am definitely one of those people that often hates how love triangles are basically just used as a way to like make some like cheap drama to go with any sort of plot. And I'm one of those people that's like, well, if you're so torn between like two different people, why not just like start a V? Like, why not explore that dynamic? Because it's like, if you like two people and they're two different humans, then you're going to have two different relationships with them no matter what. And so I think that like the idea of X-Men finally taking a love triangle or multiple love triangles that like have been super integral to their plot for like the past 20, 30 years. And finally like taking that subtext and like making it text is like, even if it's like not as textual as like you want it to be, is and like it's still and a it fits very in radical
with what
thing.
Hickman's doing with them having the their own sovereign nation that they're removing themselves from Homo sapiens society entirely, and so it's like it makes sense that this would be the time when the X-Men would be like, you know what, fuck the societal standards of Homo sapiens. We get to decide what family looks like for mutant kind. We get to decide what our culture looks like.
I have so many queer feelings right now. Just have so many queer nerd feelings.
On that note,
right
how if you and your queer feelings could have one piece of fan content or canon content around these lovely people, what would it be? What would you want to see?
I really want a picture of Scott and Logan in their underwear and dog collars, just like kneeling down in front of Emma and Jean, and Emma and Jean just like sitting in thrones and just like while looking down at the boys, just like to the side, doing like a nice high five.
A nice tasteful high five.
Yes,
that sounds lovely. I'm on board. From your lips to our fans' ears, and hopefully some of our fans can draw.
Please, if you can draw, even if you can't draw, like just give this to me. Mm-hmm.
That sounds good.
I will also accept Scott on a dog leash, in a dog collar, but there's a D-ring on both sides, and Jean has one side and Emma has the other.
Oh my god. This is good. It is. Bless. It is. Anything Bless. For that slow drip of
This is the content we need in 2020.
Oh yeah. Give me that joy sauce.
Give me that joy sauce. Coming soon to a t-shirt near you.
Along with Death is Gay.
Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much to all of our beautiful listeners for being here with us today. You can find us on Twitter at Defend Your Ship. You can email us at defendyourship@gmail.com. Maggie, do you have anything that you would like to plug today?
I don't know when this is airing, and I don't know what the world could be like. So I'm just going to ask everyone who is into that sort of thing to go plug themselves.
Woo!
and maybe Venmo me while you do
beautiful. It. Beautiful. Beautiful. I'll share what's your Venmo? I'll link it in the show notes.
Oh, it's Last Chance Dancer.
Lovely. Wonderful. Well, I think I feel wrecked. You gave me goosebumps.
I feel wrecked.
I think that qualifies as a wreck.
Yeah.
An absolute delight. Thank you so much, both of you.
This was a fucking delight.
Thank you, both of you. Thanks for letting me get stoned and talk about relationship structures.
Anytime, anytime, anyplace, anytime.